Well, today is a feast day in the church. It's the Feast of the Transfiguration. It always falls on August 6th. And whether August 6th is a Sunday or a Wednesday, it's the Feast of the Transfiguration. So it falls on a Sunday, and so we celebrate that. And we have white vestments and the white hangings and to kind of remind us of this great feast. And the Transfiguration, it's described in our Gospel reading today. And it's a story that we may be familiar with, or maybe a story new to us. But it's a story that tells us that Jesus took Peter, James, and John up a mountaintop. And the way it's described is they had an experience of the holy. They had an experience of the holy. And I think something that's very typical of our human side is whenever we experience something like that, you want to hold on to it. Have you ever had an experience? Maybe you don't use the word an experience of the holy, but have you ever had an experience in your life? Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's an experience in nature. Maybe it's something in your life you just, oh, and you almost don't want to move because you feel if you move, it's going to go. You know, you want to hold on to it. And you hear in the gospel today, you know, Peter says, well, let's stay here. Let me build something here for you and Moses and Elijah. That sense of wanting to stay in the place where that experience of the holy is. But the story is they do have to come down the mountaintop and live in the world in which they live and touched by that experience, transfigured by that experience. And they go and try to live their lives. Some ways, that's kind of a typical human experience, I think, that we, you know, we have these experiences in our lives where it's just so special, and then it's like, oh, well, back to the real life now. You know, that comes back to the real. But that may be a cynical way of saying it, but there always is this kind of wanting to balance our lives. We have this great experience, and then back into the world, and wow, it's so hard to live like this. I want to share some thoughts on this today and lead you to a celebration we're going to have at our 10:45 service for one of our parishioners. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. All this hopefully leads to that. The early followers of Christ, the early Christians, tried to live into that sense of the holy. Many of them had walked with Jesus of Nazareth, and those who came after began to hear the stories of Jesus of Nazareth. And they lived in community. You hear these stories told in the Acts of the Apostles, the way they lived their lives. They shared everything in common. They took care of the poor. They reached out to people. This incredible sense of community. When we hear it, it's almost overwhelming to us. Like, how could people have lived like that? But they lived in this incredible way. It was also a time where the early Christians, you know this, they were oppressed, they lived in danger. They were really trying to stand up and push back, push into, another way of putting it, the world of their time. You know, trying to live into the gospel, live into the sense of the holy that they had experienced in their lives and try to live that into the world to kind of transform the world, to change the world in which they lived. They kind of were trying to push back. They were kind of trying to transform things. And it was a powerful time in the life of the church. Historians tell us that about a few hundred years after Christ, the Emperor Constantine became a Christian. You've heard this, I think, before. Constantine became a Christian and made Christianity the religion of the land, almost imposed it on the empire, made it the religion. And Christianity shifted, as it would. This is just an observation. It shifted. You know, when you are oppressed and you're trying to push into the culture, perhaps it may be times push back the culture and try to bring the message of Jesus into that world. That's a different experience than when all of a sudden you're sitting next to the emperor. You know, literally, sitting next to the emperor. And things begin to change when you're sitting with power. You know? Well, emperor, you know, that blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek, blessed are the downtrodden. I don't know if Jesus meant that literally. You know, we begin to compromise. Can you identify with that? We begin to, and the early Christians really struggle with that. How do we continue this message when all of a sudden we're part of this? We're part of this now. And what's been observed by historians is this, that it's after those first few hundred years that we begin to see followers of Christ who have a certain charism and they feel a certain call because they're feeling that we're, to use a modern day word, perhaps we were selling out. Perhaps we weren't living as authentically as we could. So people like, and you've heard me speak of an example, is Saint Benedict. Benedict was someone who felt this call. His call was not able to live this kind of life in the world. He withdrew from the world. He went out to the desert. He invited others to live with him in the desert and live in this balanced life of this rhythm of work and prayer. And others joined him and went out into the desert. And they lived a life together in community. You know, 2,000 years later, that's referred to as the Benedictine tradition. You've heard me many times, I think, in homilies speak about the Benedictine tradition. My spirituality is very much formed by the Benedictine tradition. Doesn't mean yours has to be, but mine is. Benedict had this great sense of rhythm and balance. Rhythm and balance. And that is something I always strive for in my day-to-day life. The rhythm and balance of work and prayer, work, ora et labora is what the Latin was that St. Benedict used. This sense of balance in our lives. I've been part of Benedictine communities. I've shared this before. I've spent a couple summers contemplating a monastic life a long time ago. And Trappist monasteries as well. The Trappists are the ones who make all the vestments that I wear, live in the Benedictine tradition. So there are folks who are touched by the Benedictine tradition and shape and form themselves like that. There are other traditions that came along. Many of you would be familiar, I think, with St. Francis. This is many years later. St. Francis of Assisi was someone who felt a call to challenge the church into its call to always identify with the poor, that the church was becoming so wealthy that it was distancing itself from who it was really called to be. And so Francis felt this charism, this call to reach out to the poor, to serve the poor in the town of Assisi, and others joined with him and formed a community. And for Francis, rather than withdrawing from the world, he entered into the world, lived in community with other brothers, and their ministry was to the communities in which they found themselves. And to this day, we call that the Franciscan tradition. Pope Francis chose the name Francis because of that history. My whole theological training is that the church must always have a primary option for the poor. The church exists for nothing else. It exists for the poor, to reach out. That's the charism of Francis, and Francis lived into that. And there are many other traditions. You may have heard, so those are the Franciscans. You've heard the Benedictines. There's also a group called the Dominicans. St. Dominic was a saint who in his time felt a call to scholarship. He felt that people weren't really learning enough about the faith and learning about things that they could know. And so he was committed to scholarship and learning and teaching. And so many of the folks who followed St. Dominic became teachers, scholars, professors. They formed universities and colleges. And so their charism was education. So did you hear that? Just different. You could go down the list of many religious communities. They're called religious communities. Who felt called to this. And I think it started early on when folks felt a charism to step apart and to live this particular charism in the church. The Benedictine tradition had a lot of influence on England, where we come from in the Anglican tradition. Very much shaped and formed the Anglican church. At the time of the Reformation, the English Reformation, Henry VIII, you may know, pretty much destroyed the monasteries. He did away with the monasteries because he wanted the land. They had a lot of property. the monks at that time, the monasteries at that time. That was not the high point of Anglicanism, in my opinion, but it was part of the story of destroying the monasteries. And so, you know, after the Reformation, there's a lot of back and forth. Elizabeth I, this great, she just has this gift of bringing us together, this idea of Protestantism and Catholicism, this bringing together of the two, the Via Media, that's where that word comes from. Elizabeth was able to do that after the Reformation, and we live into this. And those scales would kind of fluctuate and change as history went on. We'd become more one than the other, more the other than this one, and we'd go back and forth. But in the 1800s, there was a movement in the Anglican tradition called the Oxford Movement. Not sure if you ever heard of this, called the Oxford Movement from Oxford, England. And what it was it was a movement within our tradition that was really post-Reformation calling the Anglican Church to reach out and bring more of that sacramental life, that liturgical life, into its experience. Does that make sense? The emphasis in the Reformation is so much on the word that perhaps the sacramental life, the liturgical life, it's sort of become secondary. And the Oxford Movement, to oversimplify it, raised that up. And also the Oxford Movement was folks who serve the poor, serve folks in their communities. And that was one of the, that was a movement that had a great influence on what we're doing as we sit here today. Our liturgical tradition, our Book of Common Prayer was, you know, many years later, shaped, 100 years later, over, shaped by that movement. Out of that movement, there was an Anglican religious community that was formed. I've talked about the Benedictines, the Franciscans, the Dominicans, as many others. There was a community that came out of that time called the Society of St. John the Evangelist. The Society of St. John the Evangelist. And eventually came to the United States in the Episcopal tradition. And to this day, they have a house, they have a monastery in Boston. And they have a monastery in downtown Boston. They also have a retreat center outside of Boston. It's a community of monks who live in community, share a spirituality, a rhythm of daily prayer, and they serve the community. Some serve the poor, some serve those who are ill, and they have different ministries that they share. Actually, Bishop Tom Shaw, who was the former bishop before he passed away of the Diocese of Massachusetts, was from that community. The diocese actually called forth a monk to be their bishop many years ago, and he passed away a few years ago. Many of these communities have laity who connect with them. Now, I've shared with you, I'm influenced by the Benedictine tradition. That's my kind of influence. Some communities will invite folks to be part of their community, to be what are called oblates, or be in relationship or fellowship with that community. Some people do that, make that commitment. We have a parishioner, Dan Bodwin, who has been connected to the Society of St. John the Evangelist for a few years. And he goes to 11:15 service. And he's been shaped and formed by this spirituality. We've been talking over the years, and he is entering into what's called the Fellowship of St. John the Evangelist. In other words, he lives his life goes on, but he's connected to that community by living into their spirituality, their rhythm, their prayer. And one way of becoming part of this community of lay folks who are part of it is you can either go to the monastery, which he's done many times, and gather liturgically, and the abbot there kind of welcomes you into this, or you can have that liturgical little ceremony in your local parish, and your rector can be the person who receives your kind of commitment. So at the 10:45 service this morning, Dan is going to come forward, and we're going to have this little prayer time, little service, and he's going to be kind of naming and committing himself. He'll receive a cross from that community, symbolizing his commitment to that spirituality and that rhythm of life that the folks at the Society of St. John the Evangelist live. So I raise that up. That'll happen later at the 10:45. But there are many ways that we're all called to live out our spirituality, many shapes and forms. And you know that. We all have our different rhythms, our ways that we express ourselves, and how significant it is to be fed and nourished by that, to gain that sense of a transfiguration experience, a mountaintop experience. But knowing that it's what feeds and nourishes us to engage in our world, like the early followers of Christ, to challenge that world, to engage with that world, to transform that world, to transfigure that world. And many of us find particular ways of feeding our spirituality. As I said, for me, it's the Benedictine tradition. For some folks, it might be Curcio. For some folks, it might be the Society of St. John the Evangelist. For some folks, it may be the Julian gathering, gathering in quiet prayer. I mean, there are many ways and shapes that our spiritual lives are lived. So let this Feast of the Transfiguration be, for all of us, a call, a reminder of how can I feed and nourish my spiritual journey? How do I feed and nourish this sense of the holy in my life so that it transforms, transfigures me, so I can go forth and transform and transfigure the world around us?